I've been enjoying Pastor Wood teaching from Joshua, and I want to skip ahead a little bit to one of my favorite stories from the Old Testament. If you will turn with me, you can turn to it in 2 Kings chapter 5. So if you'll turn to 2 Kings chapter 5, and I want to try to help you jump ahead for those of you who are in Joshua, and that's where your mind is, and there's a lot that's transpired between the time of Joshua and this time, and here it is. After Joshua and the Israelites inherited the land, they lived there for some time, and they entered into they began this sort of cycle of turning away from God, and so God would allow them to be oppressed by their enemies, and then they would say, "Oh Lord, I'm sorry, I messed up, please forgive me," and God would raise up a judge who would save them from their enemies, and then they'd have a time of peace, and then before long they'd mess up again. And he'd have to raise up another judge. And these judges were not perfect people. But anyway, they went through this judge cycle over and over and over. And finally, they said, "We want a king. We want to be like the people around us." And so God gave them a king. He wasn't a great king. And they've gone through now a succession of kings. And the kingdom has split. There are two kingdoms now. There's Israel and Judah. And this story is set in Israel during this time of a divided kingdom. And the kings of Israel ought to know God, but they don't. By and large, the kings of Israel didn't walk with God. And so now we have in Israel this story from 2 Kings 5. Now Naaman was commander of the army of the king of Aram. He was a great man in the sight of his master and highly regarded because through him the Lord had given victory to Aram. He was a valiant soldier, but he had leprosy. Now bands from Aram had gone out and had taken captive a young girl from Israel, and she served Naaman's wife. She said to her mistress, "If only my master would see the prophet who is in Samaria, he would cure him of his leprosy." And Naaman went to his master and told him what the girl from Israel had said. "By all means go," the king of Aram replied. "I will send a letter to the king of Israel." So Naaman left, taking with him 10 talents of silver, 6,000 shekels of gold, and 10 sets of clothing. The letter that he took to the king of Israel read, "With this letter I am sending my servant Naaman to you so that you may cure him of his leprosy." As soon as the king of Israel read the letter, he tore his robes and said, "Am I God? Can I kill and bring back to life? Why does this fellow send someone to me to be cured of his leprosy? See how he is trying to pick a quarrel with me." When Elisha, the man of God, heard that the king of Israel had torn his robes, he sent him this message, "Why have you torn your robes? Have the man come to me, and he will know that there is a prophet in Israel." So Naaman went with his horses and chariots and stopped at the door of Elisha's house. Elisha sent a messenger to him to say to him, "Go, wash yourself 7 times in the Jordan, and your flesh will be restored, and you will be cleansed." But Naaman went away angry and said, "I thought that he would surely come out to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God and wave his hand over the spot and cure me of my leprosy. Are not Abana and Pharpar, the rivers of Damascus, better than any of the waters of Israel? Couldn't I wash in them and be cleansed?" So he turned and went off in a rage. Naaman's servants went to him and said, "My father, if the prophet had told you to do some great thing, would you not have done it? How much more then when he tells you, 'Wash and be cleansed'?" So he went down and dipped himself in the Jordan 7 times, as the man of God had told him, and his flesh was restored and became clean like that of a young boy. Then Naaman and all his attendants went back to the man of God. He stood before him and said, "Now I know that there is no God in all the world except in Israel. Please now accept a gift from your servant." The prophet answered, "As surely as the Lord lives whom I serve, I will not accept a thing." And even though Naaman urged him, he refused. "If you will not," said Naaman, "please let me, your servant, be given as much earth as a pair of mules can carry, for your servant will never again make burnt offerings and sacrifices to any other god but the Lord. But may the Lord forgive your servant for this one thing. When my master enters the temple of Rimmon to bow down, and he is leaning on my arm, and I bow there also, when I bow down in the temple of Rimmon, may the Lord forgive your servant for this." "Go in peace," Elisha said. And after Naaman had traveled some distance, Gehazi, the servant of Elisha, the man of God, said to himself, "My master was too easy on Naaman, this Aramean, by not accepting from him what he brought. As surely as the Lord lives, I will run after him and get something from him." So Gehazi hurried after Naaman. When Naaman saw him running toward him, he got down from the chariot to meet him. "Is everything all right?" he asked. "Everything is all right," Gehazi answered. "My master sent me to say, Two young men from the company of the prophets have just come to me from the hill country of Ephraim. Please give them a talent of silver and two sets of clothing. By all means, take two talents, said Naaman. He urged Gehazi to accept them and then tied up the two talents of silver in two bags with two sets of clothing. He gave them to two of his servants, and they carried them ahead of Gehazi. When Gehazi came to the hill, he took the things from the servants and put them away in the house. He sent the men away, and they left. Then he went in and stood before his master, Elisha. Where have you been, Gehazi? Elisha asked. Your servant didn't go anywhere, Gehazi answered. But Elisha said to him, Was not my spirit with you when the man got down from his chariot to meet you? Is this the time to take money or to accept clothes, olive groves, vineyards, flocks, herds, or men servants or maid servants? Naaman's leprosy will cling to you and your descendants forever. Then Gehazi went from Elisha's presence, and he was leprous, as white as snow. May God add his blessing to this reading from his holy and inspired word. What opens with Naaman, the commander of the king, of the army of Aram. He's a Syrian, and the Syrians have been at war with Israel. We find earlier in at the end of 1 Kings, it was the Arameans who killed Ahab, and so while there had been battles going back and forth, it's possible that even the victories that it mentions that he had, it's possible that the victories God gave him were over Israel and other enemies. Naaman is a powerful person. How would you like to be Naaman? Does it sound pretty good? He's the commander of the army of Syria. He's like maybe the second most powerful man in this country. And they've sort of been on a roll. They've been winning battles. It's good to be Naaman. Naaman has servants. You ever wanted to have a servant? Just one. I could do a lot with a servant. He has a bunch of servants. No doubt. He was highly regarded because the Lord, through him, the Lord had given victory to Aram. That's interesting, too. He's very successful, and it says that God had given him victory. Isn't that it? He didn't know God. He wasn't it's like, wow, this is a pious Christian. God's given him victory. Not so. God was giving him victory for God's own purpose. You know what? God is doing what God is interested in doing. And sometimes it's not the way we would like it. We'd like to see all the Christians win all the time, wouldn't we? As long as we want our side to win. I'd like for my team to be 12-0. You know, that's just, we like victory, but God seems to often have other ideas about what we need. And he even speaks in Isaiah about using wicked nations as the rod of his wrath, that he used these evil nations to punish his people, to turn them back to him, because what they needed most was not to be victorious and not to be wealthy and not even really to be healthy. They needed to know God. And Naaman has a whole bunch of stuff, but he has two major problems. He doesn't know God and he has leprosy. Have you ever envied somebody? You say, wow, that person's got it all. They've got money, they've got clothes, they've got popularity, they've got whatever it is, they've got an Xbox or a DS. Oh man, I'm tired of hearing about this stuff. But anyway, you know, my kids, some of my kids, I won't say all of them, but some of my children are good at telling me what other kids have. Oh, they've got this, they've got that. You know, well, wow, doesn't that sound good? But since we know the story, we wouldn't want to be Naaman, right? You would. He's got all the success, but he has some other problems too. Let me just drop a little seed here. It's that way with just about everybody. That person that you envy has some problem you don't know about. From far away, it may seem like, wow, Naaman is the commander of this army. He's got everything he could want. He's the second in command of a country that's really powerful right now. He just has a little problem. It's an infectious skin disease. That's not a little problem. In Israel, that would be terrible. Now, I'm not sure that the laws in Syria were the same. They no doubt were not. But in Israel, if a person had leprosy, he was a complete outcast. It overshadowed your whole life. You couldn't live with other people. You had to live in a separate place. You had to go around telling people that you were unclean. If we look back in 2 Chronicles 26 at the story of Uzziah, Uzziah was a powerful king, and for years, decades, God blessed him. He built up fortresses. He had victories. He did over and over and over again. God blessed him. But at the end of his life, he became proud, and he went into the temple to burn incense, which was something he wasn't supposed to do. And the priest told him, don't do it. He went in there, and God struck him with leprosy. And at the end of his life, he lived alone. And after all these phenomenal things he'd accomplished, the epitaph they wrote on his tombstone was not, what a great king, what great victories. The epitaph on his tomb was, he had leprosy. It was bad. And so Naaman has a serious problem. He has leprosy. So first point is this, don't be envious of that person that you think has everything. They may not. They may have some problems you don't know about. Those problems you don't know about may be serious. So don't envy them. But who is it that gives Naaman some good advice? It's a little slave girl from Israel. You picture the disparity here. He is the second most powerful person in his nation, and the person who is helping him is a little slave, foreign slave girl from Israel. You can't get a bigger disparity in power and status than that. But this little girl had something that Naaman needed. If you know Jesus, you have something that everybody in the world needs, even the most powerful people. And he desperately needed what this little slave girl had. And what she said is, if only my master would see the prophet who's in Samaria, he would cure him of his leprosy. Gives us a clue that Naaman probably was a reasonably good master. She cared about him and she wanted to see him healed. She wasn't sitting there saying, I wish this foreign general would keel over and die. She's saying, I wish he would see the prophet. She had compassion on him, even though she's been torn out of her homeland, brought to a place and made to serve people who weren't her own. She had compassion on him. And so Naaman went to his master and told him what the girl from Israel had said. He listened to wisdom. Do y'all listen to wisdom? No matter where it comes from? There's a term. When I was in college, one of my favorite courses was total quality management. At the time that was becoming, it was like a new thing. Now people have gone way beyond that. That seems very old. But at the time it was this cutting edge thing to try to think about how organizations work and how they go wrong and the dumb things that they do that take companies that ought to do well and make them go bad. And one of the things that they said you really need to avoid is what you call brainlining. And it would work like this. If you drew an organization chart where you had the people in charge of your organization at the top and the people who are on the lowest workers at the bottom, and when you look at this chart, somewhere on the chart you draw a line across the middle of it. And the people above the line are paid to think. And the people below the line are paid to work. It's brainlining. You say, these people are paid for what they know. These people are paid for what they do. And the result is that they don't listen to the ones beneath the line. That's a really bad, stupid thing to do. And the scripture says, hey, a wise person heeds advice. And Naaman listened to this little girl. We need to do the same thing. Listen to those who give advice, even if that advice is coming from a source that you wouldn't normally listen to. She gave him great advice. She said, go see the prophet. He'll cure you. So Naaman goes to his master, and the king says, by all means, go. I'll make it work out for you. I'm going to send a letter to the king of Israel. So first, I'm going to send a letter. I'm going to make sure he knows this is for me. You need to get with it, buddy. And he also is going to pay for it. And he sends quite a lot of money. You see, get the impression, the picture that this fellow is rich. 10 talents of silver. A talent was 75 pounds. So he sends 750 pounds of silver. That's not quite half a ton, but it's a respectable amount of silver. Y'all ever seen 750 pounds of silver? I haven't. 6,000 shekels of gold and 10 sets of clothing. So he loads up this entourage and he takes his letter and he goes to see the king of Israel. And as soon as the king of Israel read the letter, he said, sure, no problem, send him to me. Is that what he said? No, not at all. He tore his robes. And that was a picture of being in deep distress. When the king tore his robes, he was saying, I am in big trouble. Because he said, this is a big, big, big problem. The king of Syria is trying to pick a fight with me. Was the king of Syria trying to pick a fight with him? No. You ever thought you knew what somebody was coming to you to tell you? I know what you're thinking. I know what you're about. I know what you're coming for. You ever thought you knew what somebody was thinking and then been wrong? Wow, I didn't. Ooh. Well, this is the king. He thinks he knows what the king of Aram is all about. And he's anxious. Have you ever been anxious? I have to confess, I've been anxious. Been anxious recently. You know what the scripture tells us? Don't be anxious about anything. But what? That's right. In everything, prayer and petition, make your requests known to God. Okay. The key to not being anxious is not just to command don't be anxious. It's to take those things to the Lord. This king was anxious because he didn't know God. And he had a real problem. Without God, can't heal this person. With God, that's no problem. He likely didn't know the Lord. So he says, why is he coming to me? This is going to be a fight. And Elisha hears that the king of Israel's torn his robes, and he sends him a message. I love this. Elisha has messengers. He sends him a message. Why'd you tear your robes? Have him come to me. He'll know there's a prophet in Israel. So he said, send a man to me. We'll take care of this. So Naaman stopped at verse 9 with his horses and chariots and stopped at the door of Elisha's house. So we see this picture, Naaman the general with his servants, with his horses and his chariots and his mules and his gold and his silver and his clothes pulls up at the door of Elisha's house. And Elisha sends a messenger to him. I love that. Elisha didn't even get up and come out of the house. He sent a messenger to him. He said, go tell him to dip himself 7 times in Jordan, he'll be clean. And Naaman is irate. Can you picture this? He's thinking, I'm used to telling people to come talk to me and they come immediately and I tell them what to do and they do it. And I have humbled myself and I've driven a long way and I brought all this stuff with you and I can pay you and I thought you would just come out and wave your hand over me and cleanse me. I've humbled myself. And Elisha says, well, not yet. Not yet. You still think you can buy this. You've got a problem. You think that you have something God needs or something that I need. And Elisha's whole point here is, you know what? God doesn't need anything. It says in Psalm 50, he says, if I were hungry, I wouldn't tell you. God says, I'm not hungry. I don't need gold or silver. Gold, yeah, I'm paving heaven with it. Clothing, yeah, I clothe myself in light. No problem. You know, have you seen the lilies of the field? Yeah, I made them clothe themselves. Thank you very much. Don't need your clothes. Don't need your gold. Don't need your silver. Don't need your pomp and circumstance. God doesn't need any of that stuff. And so Naaman pulls up outside, and he is, on one hand, he's humbled himself, but on the other hand, he hasn't humbled himself enough. He's humbled himself enough to ask for help, but he still thinks he has something of value. And Elisha says to him, in effect, you don't have anything of value that I need. You don't have, I'm not even going to come out and speak to you, but I am going to give you a command to obey. And if you'll humble yourself and obey it, you'll be saved. And that was what Naaman needed to hear. Have you ever come to God, wanted Him to save you? You really wanted Him to save you? I really want God to do something. But then you tell God how He's supposed to answer your prayer. I've figured it out. I want you to do this and this and this. I want it to work out this way. Oh Lord, this is a bad situation. If you'll just do this. I have to admit, I did that a lot, especially when I was a teenager. I was very, you know, pious. I was raised in a Christian home. I had all the answers. I had my life figured out. I knew who I wanted to marry. I knew what I wanted to drive. I knew where I wanted to live. I knew how much I wanted to make. I had a plan for everything. And I was telling God, oh, Lord, I will serve you. I'll give you whatever if you'll give me this. It's like God was my Coke machine. You know, you just decide if that Coke is, now they're really expensive, but anyway, at the time that I was doing this, Coke was about 50 cents. You know, it's like, look, you know, if I've got the money in my pocket, that's a bad number because it works out to even change. At the time, a Coke was 40 cents. How about that? I've got 2 quarters in my pocket. If I want to put my 2 quarters in the machine, I expect to get a Coke and a dime. Thank you very much. I put this in, I get this out. That's not God. It's a vending machine. But we often approach God, and I think certainly Naaman was, saying this, I'll give you this, you give me that. Fair? And they call that humility, and it's not. God says, I don't need your stuff. You need me. You need me. And so Elisha sends a messenger out to him and says, go wash yourself 7 times in the Jordan, and your flesh will be restored, and you'll be cleansed. And the Jordan, of course, Naaman starts commenting on the rivers and talking about how his rivers, my rivers are cleaner than your rivers. You know, this is not, you know, I'm not interested in bathing in this muddy river. I mean, if I wanted to get washed, I'd pick a clean river. I'd pick a river closer to home. Thank you very much. But God said, I want you to go dip yourself in the Jordan. Go baptize yourself 7 times and you'll be cleansed. And he went off in a rage. And once again, his servants came to him and say to him, oh, Master, he gave you a good word. He told you a good thing. I mean, if he had told you to do something hard, would you have done it? If he told you to climb a mountain, you would do it. If he told you to do something really difficult, he said, go watch, you can do this. You may not want to do it, but you can. The only thing that stands between you and doing what God's requiring of you is your pride. Would you be willing to put away your pride to receive what God has for you? And he listens to them again. So twice in this story, he's listened to someone who would ordinarily be beneath him, and they give him wise advice. So he goes down, he dips himself in the Jordan 7 times, and his flesh was restored and became clean like that of a young boy. He was sent to God by a young girl, and he becomes out of the river like a young boy. And Jesus said to his disciples, I'll tell you the truth, unless you become like little children, you won't enter the kingdom of heaven. There's a picture there of his being completely restored, like this little Israelite girl that had sent him to the Lord. He became clean. And so then Naaman and his attendants went back to Elisha, and he stands there and he says, now I know that there's no God in all the world except in Israel. That's a great thing. He's expressing his faith, and he wants to pay Elisha, and Elisha says, I won't take a thing. Remember the story with Abraham, when Abraham rescued Lot, it was a similar thing. He said, I won't accept anything from the king of Sodom, lest you say that I paid for this. You know, you'll later on, I'm not even taking the thong of a sandal, because I don't want you to ever say you could buy this. And Elisha said the same thing. I'm not taking anything from you, because I want to be clear that God did this and he doesn't do it for money. So he said, as surely as the Lord lives, I will not accept a thing. And even though Naaman urged him, he refused. And then Naaman says, well, if you will not, let me take 2 mules loads of earth, and because I'm going to sacrifice to your God. See, the mindset that Naaman had was that gods are territorial. And yet he's expressed, and one, it's interesting, he just said a minute ago, I know there's no God in all the world except your God. But even though he's expressed with his mouth something that was theologically true, he then turns around and acts in the way that sort of the way he's always been brought up. You know, let me take 2 loads of earth, so when I pray to your God, I can pray over Israel's dirt. Because if he's God over Israel, I want to take a little piece of Israel with me. You ever wanted to take a little piece of it with you? Go to a retreat or something. I used to carry around a rock for a while. I found it at a camp that I'd gone to a retreat, and it was especially meaningful, and God met me there, and I just felt like that was a great time. I wanted to remember it, so I picked up this rock. You know, I wasn't a pagan. I didn't think that God somehow was associated with the rock. I just wanted to remember that experience in that place. For whatever reason, Naaman wants to take some dirt with him. And you know what? Elisha, it's interesting. Elisha didn't dissuade him from doing that. I find that just interesting. He could have said, you know, you just said that he's God everywhere. Why do you want to take dirt? Idiot? No. If God's God everywhere, you don't need Israel's dirt. You know what Elisha said to him? He said, go in peace. You know, you don't have to correct every person's misperception all the time. Now, that doesn't mean that we shouldn't confront theological errors and blatant heresies and real bad problems, but if you're feeling like your gift, your ministry is to correct everybody, everywhere, all the time, Elisha didn't. That's all I'll say. I'm not saying God hadn't called you to that. Maybe he has. Maybe what you need to do is correct every person everywhere all the time. But Elisha didn't correct him. He said, go in peace. Take the dirt. Go ahead. And he asked for permission to not be held accountable for bowing to this false god. He's saying, I'm not really worshiping that god. And Elisha just said, go in peace. It's really good. But after he leaves, Gehazi says, and he brings up his race and nationality. He said, Elisha was too easy on that Aramean. He's that foreigner. He should have paid. My master was too easy on Naaman this Aramaean by not accepting from him what he brought. As surely as the Lord lives. Oh, man. Bad move. Don't put God's name on disobedience. As surely as the Lord lives, I'm going to go get something from him. And so he goes and lies to Naaman. And Naaman generously gives him this two talents of silver. It's 150 pounds of silver. He puts it on two servants and they've got to lug it back. I mean, that's quite a load. And they carry this silver back and the clothing. And what does he get with it? He gets leprosy. Oh, what a bad thing. Not a good deal. The irony is that Naaman had all this stuff, but what he needed was to know God. And when he came and he humbled himself, he met the Lord. God saved him. Gehazi, who had been reared and been living in a place where God did extraordinary things, wanted the stuff. And when he embraced the stuff, you know what he got with it? Death. It's the same way for us. There are people who don't know the Lord and they have all this stuff and what they really need is to know God. And you know what? The smallest child can point them to Jesus. You don't have to be a genius. But there are plenty of folks who are reared in a place where God lives and where they hear the truth and where they see it lived out. And instead, what they really want is the stuff. And you know what comes with that stuff? Death. It's death. The greatest gift you can have is for God to make you clean. And pray that He'll do that today.